So I'm going to be talking to you about the Center for Future Health, which is located at the University of Rochester, and which differs from the other smart health or smart tools that we've been hearing about today, in that it's set up within a medical school. It's set up within a medical school, so it has the perspective of the healthcare system in Western New York State, which of course is unique, because once you've seen one healthcare system, you've seen one healthcare system. But I think that it builds on a lot of the things that we've heard about today from other speakers in terms of the strategy that we'd like to pursue, in that we have an opportunity with the development of this new knowledge, pervasive computing, distributed sensing, to not only change how we help take care of ourselves, to keep safe in a sense that everybody here in the room can grasp, but it also provides the opportunity for physicians to create new tools for assessing health, and in the right hands, which I believe we have at the University of Rochester, to give a lot of those tools back to the consumer. So we're have been very fortunate to have some collaborations with Sumi and Kent Larson and Irfan, which want to build on some of the work that they're doing collaboratively as well as our own. We've heard a little bit about this from Lutz in the last talk, but we really are facing a very important problem right now in terms of the economic reality. And I'm going to bring statistics now from the United States. We have spent more than 14% of our gross domestic product in healthcare, but we are only ranked number 31st in terms of healthcare delivery. And we have a big change coming up in terms of the ratio of care providers to wage earners as the population ages. We're going to have fewer and fewer people who are capable of giving care, even ad hoc care, to individuals who need it. The cost of assistive care is beyond the reach of the ordinary person. And on top of that, add the burden of the fact that as you pass the 65 mark, the frequency of need to access medical care increases sixfold. And as we increase the number of individuals two or threefold in that category, you'll see that the demand on the medical care system is going to go up 18-fold. So even if we all trained to be nurses and doctors, there's no way that we could provide care the way that we do now. And although it's a wonderful field to be in, I'm not recommending that we do that. The other thing that's happening is we're being very good at taking care of people who are disabled, and so the ratio of disabled individuals has changed in the population, so that the ratio of able caregivers to disabled will be 6-to-1 in the year 2030. Another way of looking at that is that 40% of households will have a disabled person to care for. And that's that. I mean, for those of you who are taking care of a disabled person now, imagine if almost everybody had that situation. How would you get work done? Well, you probably wouldn't. So those are frightening statistics, aren't they? Those are from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and New England Journal of Medicine and Kaiser Permanente. So we have come to the conclusion that the healthcare system has to change. And the strategy that we would like to propose is, right now it's very tertiary care centric. It's been designed by physicians and caregivers so that it's easy when we get up in the morning to go to work and get the data that we need in order to get out of the hospital again. It's not very friendly toward patients. Everybody perceives this. That's why they try and do a lot of things to try and get care in other ways. The more complex the procedure, the more up toward tertiary care facilities you get sent, away from the people who know you and your personal network. And what we would like to see is the balance of gravity in the system change so that the home becomes a place where care is actually given. And we're calling it a smart medical home. It's connected to the community. It has information network access. It does telehealth. But it creates an extension of the current healthcare system. And it has as a constraint that it cannot do this by requiring more support from healthcare providers, because there aren't going to be enough. It has to be based on what consumers can do for themselves and summarizing some of the things that they can do in terms of their health support so that when they access their care provider, their visits are more efficient and more satisfying, and the care that they have provided is better quality. It's a very small order. And we feel that this is going to have some helpful benefit in terms of solving the cash crisis, because if we do it properly, we'll be able to tilt the balance from disease management, which is the tertiary care facility, to prevention. Because people can do prevention for themselves if they know what to do in order to do prevention. There's a lot of misinformation out there that people pursue in efforts to try and take care of themselves. But if we build a system correctly to support individual care, we should be able to let people do efficient prevention. And that's going to be much less expensive, so that we might be able to accommodate disease management in the future in a better way. So how do you go about doing that? What are the requirements? You're going to need to have a health care system which is personalized, set to your longitudinal baseline, what's normal for you, that can help you predict and rapidly respond to health emergencies. And we've heard some about that from others today. You know, what's an unsafe condition? Alert you to those kinds of things. Have you fallen down and not gotten up? It needs to assist you in managing chronic conditions. As we've heard, there are many, many people who are going to have chronic conditions. And a lot of the healthcare cost that occurs now is because people manage their chronic conditions inadequately and end up being hospitalized because they didn't take their medications right, they didn't understand their treatment regimen. And so if we can support chronic disease management in an adequate way that doesn't tap into the provider too much, we're going to get a lot of benefit from that. We want to have a system that will detect your risk factors and help you make changes in your behavior so that you don't actually develop the full-blown disease, because prevention is cheaper and it's also a lot more fun than being sick. And that builds into the last part, which is that promoting these preventive measures and healthy lifestyle behaviors will help make people age well and have a high quality of life. All right, so how do we visualize this system? Parts of this are right in Rochester. Parts of this are counting on collaborators to help with. This little mobile health assistant is what Sumi was talking about. That's yours right there. But basically what we talk about is decorating a home with smart sensors and effectors, perhaps small switches on cabinets, or having a body-worn device that can tell orientation. It may be tracked by ultrasound. And then, depending upon your need, it will give an assistive application to you. All right? Everyone's smart home system will do the basics of vital sign technology. But for individuals who have problems with memory, it'll have a memory assistance focus. For individuals who have problems with their heart disease, it'll support their cardiovascular problems and so forth. And the data from these applications goes into a health status interpreter, which monitors the general health, keeps that personal baseline, which is yours, and informs you when you have changes in your baseline, gives helpful suggestions, has a verbal interface so that you don't have to keyboard in order to get the information that you need about your health. It creates your personal record that you can use for yourself and then share with the people that you designate. You don't want to have everybody, you don't want your, you know, time that you went to bed and got up on the internet every day with everybody having access to it. So privacy protection has to be built in. And it also has to be a condensed record in such a way that when you do want to share it with your healthcare provider, that it's summarized so that they don't have to sit and watch 20 hours of video. I don't have time to do that in my practice. I'm already busy all the time with the patient visits that I have. And I don't need to have more contacts from patients. I need to make the contacts that I have more effective. In an informal survey of the physicians that I work with at Strong Memorial Hospital, they say about 30 to 40% of the patient visits that they have, they didn't need to have. There are simple problems, and if people knew what to do for them, they wouldn't need to come into the office. And I can tell you, everybody who has an elderly parent drives them in, sits there 2 hours in the doctor's office, gets that 2 minutes of advice, they're mad that it took all of that time. So we want to take an offload that information into the personal information advisor repository so that those visits can be saved and spent on people who have more difficult and problematic disease and who need more advice. So we have a research laboratory like the others here have, where we can prototype the kinds of projects that we're thinking about and try and pick out the specific parts of the technology that seem to have utility in disease diagnosis. Now, this is a huge difference in what we're trying to accomplish from what others here have tried to accomplish. I know what I'm looking for when I see somebody who has a gait disorder. I know whether or not the pattern of gait is predictive of stroke. I know whether or not it looks like Parkinson's disease. And if I can design a tool in the home that lets you know whether or not your gait has deteriorated into a pattern that looks like Parkinson's disease, and then tells you, this looks problematic, go to the doctor. There are drugs there that can prevent your Parkinson's disease from progressing, much cheaper than nursing home care. So when I build my monitoring devices, I don't just want to know, did you go to bed, did you get up, is the back door open? I want to know, does the pattern of activity that you have look like anxiety disorder? Does it look like depression? Does it look like early stroke? I mean, one third of the dementia that we see out there is preventable because it's related to cardiovascular disease. That's an aspirin a day. How do you make people take an aspirin a day? They have to have some feedback from their personal baseline that says, this will help me. At least that's the hypothesis I would like to have an opportunity to test. So some of these tools that I'm going to tell you about, we've already started to work on. I think I talked about that. Here's an example. As a dermatologist, I'm very interested in visible light images and in their management and in creating visible light repositories for individuals to track skin disease. 15% of visits to physician offices have to do with skin disease. And as I said, the majority of visits, one-third of the visits that come to a dermatologist's office are for things that over-the-counter medications can take care of adequately. So if we're able to build a repository where you can keep track of the skin changes that you're interested in, look at them over time, perhaps compare them with a base of images that have known diagnoses, you might make some good guesses and avoid that doctor visit. Another key area that is important for management. Can you hear this? All right. People need to have a verbal interface. And so this is I think it's maybe coming out of here. This is a verbal interface. It knows this lady's medications. Can you hear it? No?
Could Celebrex cause headaches?
Speaker.
I'm sorry, but I don't know what to say.
Could Celebrex cause headaches?
No, headache is not an expected side effect of Celebrex. Do you have a headache?
Yes.
Now, I think that's a very interesting point. This is an interactive technology. It's not just doing checklist. She never said she had a headache, but she's asking about pain medicine and whether or not something can cause a headache, so it infers from the conversation that she might have a headache and starts to talk about that. So having this is like a short nursing phone call. It knows the side effects of the medicines. You can query it. You can find out what interacts and maybe save a few phone calls, maybe get off the medication that's causing the side effect, save the consequences of having some severe side effect because you stopped early enough because you didn't have to slug through 2 hours trying to get a phone call returned and make progress. And this also would help with compliance and prompting in terms of daily medication requirements. We have another tool that we've developed, which is a gait monitor. And this one is also in prototype stage right now. It's able to track all of the joints, the major joints in an individual, so that it can do stride length, arm swing, turning radiance, cadence, stance. It can track two people simultaneously and keep them individual. You can see there's two people walking through this environment. What it can't do right now is initiate those. You have to by hand initiate, and it only does about a minute of tracking. But that kind of data is sufficient to make decisions about whether or not you have a gait disorder. And many, many medical conditions are diagnosable through gait disorder. So this is a technology that might not go into the home the first day out of the box, but certainly could go in the corridor at the doctor's office, and you could do longitudinal baseline comparisons on this kind of data after it was condensed so that you would know whether or not a person's gait had changed, and therefore be able to infer about their diagnostic state. Okay, so all of this usually sounds pretty intrusive to people, but we think of it as being fairly unobtrusive. I mean, the individual themselves really only sees the interface with their personal health and wellness record. They communicate with a physician or their family as they wish. All this stuff in the blue, the middleware, the modules and sensors, and the central system that keeps track of it is going to be unobtrusive and in a background environment, something like what all the others have talked to you about today in terms of making a smart home a livable environment. It's got to be easy to be in. So that's what the user wants to have on it. They want to have information. They want feedback. They want to be able to ask questions and have them answered. What do providers want from a healthcare system like that? And I think a real obstacle and barrier to trying to get a smart home environment created is physicians have to understand how they can use the data. They don't want you out there collecting a whole lot of data, which when you come in with a specific complaint, they then have to call through in order to get at what they know is going on. Because they can see just by looking, you know, this is what's going on, and this person has 7,000 questions. They would like to have the data that you're collecting have something to do with the problems that you have so that the visit can then focus on education and support.